Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest today is Emily Grayson, marine ecologist. She's the program manager of the Washington Sea Grant's Green Crab Team. Emily and I met in a Port Townsend coffee shop that was before the governor's stay-at-home order to catch up on the state of the invasive European green crab in the Salish Sea. Part one of our conversation was aired on Nature Now, first on March the 18th of this year. Today, we will hear part two of that conversation. But first, let's hear this week's mystery sound. Well, we'll come back to these sounds later in the program, but there are a lot of clues. Listen, hope you listen carefully. Well, as we sort of are all probably aware, this is the fourth week of the Stay Home, Stay Healthy order. And I know many of us are increasing our reading, both for fun and internal growth. And I would like to share some ideas for good books to read for Nature Now listeners. Two books recommended by Wendy Feltham are Where the Crawdad Sings by Delia Owens and The Orchardist by Amanda Copland. I've read Where the Crawdad Sings. It's set in the coastal edge of North Carolina, and the main character learned to survive and thrive alone in the marsh that she calls home. Quoting Goodreads, the book is at once an exquisite ode to the natural world, a heartbreaking coming-of-age story, and a surprising tale of possible murder. I've not read The Orchardist, but it is on my list. It's another novel of historical fiction. It's of a solitary person who survives in the foothills of the Cascades in the early 1900s. And he survives by deepening his sensitivities and connections with the world of living things and developing a profound sense of place. Mary Robson's current favorite authors are Robert McFarlane, a British author and naturalist, and Hope Yarrant, a brilliant American scientist. Mary recommends McFarlane's Underland, a deep time journey, in which the author explores an exceedingly powerful question of our times. Are we being good ancestors to the future Earth? Rooted in the depths of the human soul and the heart of the earth, this book could change the way we see the world. Another book by McFarlane that Mary recommends is The Lost Words, a tale of natural history words that were left out of a recent edition of the Oxford Youth Dictionary and out of the language of children's lives and imagination. In Lab Girl, written by Mary's other current favorite, Hope Yarrant, Yarn writes the stories of her growing up and struggling to build her life as an acclaimed paleobotanist. Humor and sadness, triumphs and disappointments, depression and exhilaration all come from Yarn's commitment that scientific work is done, quote, with both the heart and the hands, close quote. Early this year, 2020, Yarn published her second book, The Story of More: How We Got to Climate Change, and Where Do We Go From Here? I've read Lab Girl and certainly recommend it, and The Story of More is on my list. And lastly, Kathy Darrow reminds us to check out the books, both those read and those to be read, by the Jefferson Land Trust Natural History Society Book Club. And I'll refer you to the Natural History Society website if you Google Jefferson Land Trust Natural History Society. You'll get to their website, follow the book club link, and you can find their list of current and past selections. So now going on to part two of my conversation with Emily Grayson of the Washington Sea Grant about the invasive European green crab. The European green crab, considered one of the world's worst invasive species, is poised to wreak havoc in the marine ecosystem of the Salish Sea. Over the years on Nature Now, we have explored the threats from the green crabs and what was being done to prevent their spread. Emily was on the program in September 2015, and in July and August 2016, I actually went out with the local crab team. And you'll hear a couple of recordings throughout the summer of 2016 on that. And then earlier this year, on March 18th, Nature Now aired part one of my update of what's been happening over the past couple years. The conversation was recorded in a coffee shop in downtown Port Townsend before we all became aware of the need to practice social distancing to reduce infection risks and to slow the spread of COVID-19. Listening to that recording, I must admit I actually find the background noises in the recording rather reassuring. It's sort of reminders of the normal before COVID-19. Other parts of the program were recorded this week with me at home on the phone and Nora Petrich, our sound engineer and editor, in the recording booth at the KPTC station.
So I'm back with Emily Grayson of the Washington Sea Grant Crab Team. And in our last interview, we sort of reviewed the issue of the European green crab and its invasiveness and some of the work that had been done, kind of the history of the spread of the green crab into the West Coast and some of the concerns it raises. So what I'd like to talk to Emily about now is we're just almost at the beginning of the 2020 sampling season. What are you looking for this season?
This season's going to be an interesting one for us, and I feel like I find myself saying that every single year.
Well, actually, that's a good thing, you know?
It's just great that I'm not getting bored.
Right.
It doesn't let us get bored. The findings at the end of last season in North Puget Sound in Whatcom County, particularly Drayton Harbor and Lummi Bay, we were just starting to learn about the populations of crabs that were there as it was getting too cold to sample for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of had to leave those places with a little bit of information.
And a lot of question marks.
So that's a particularly interesting geography that we're keen to keep our eyes on.
Interesting because of what?
Because we feel like there's still a lot more to learn. And of course, there's a very great need in those places where green crabs are more dense to get out there and remove as many as quickly as possible.
So, of course, there's a lot of marsh and estuary land.
Yeah, there's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah.
And that's an extra challenge.
Mm-hmm. Are there other places that you want to watch specifically?
I'm curious to spend a little bit more time or to learn a little bit more about the Strait of Juan de Fuca and some of the unexplored sites. I think we may have talked in the past about how there's actually not a lot of what we consider the top tier habitat for European green crab along the strait.
Okay, define top tier habitat.
Top tier is the areas that are really muddy, salty habitat. So salt marshes, pocket estuaries, places people don't actually spend a lot of time on. Great places to go birding. But those are the places where green crabs probably survive the best, and that's why we do our early detection work there, because that's the places we're likely to find the populations while they're still small, and they're small enough to do anything about.
So the general kind of invasive species protocol really is about early detection, rapid response.
Nailed it.
Basically, what is that?
Early detection is the key feature where we do as much prevention as we can, but we know that something's going to get through the gaps.
Sure.
And so our goal is to find the populations while they're still very small, because that's the time when we can have the greatest impact on the population growth rate. That's the time when we have the chance to intervene before they sort of go into
take
that
over.
Exponential growth rate. And so that's our goal, is to find them, to look for the needle in the haystack.
So you said you are really interested in the straits itself. Are you increasing the sites you're monitoring or increasing the effort? And what are you doing?
Good question. So the Crab Team Network, which is currently 56 sites, is more or less maxed out in terms of how much ground we can cover. What's been a really helpful development in the past 2 to 3 years is that Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, which is the management agency for invasive aquatics, and has management jurisdiction, has added capacity.
Oh, good.
In the form of a full-time technician who I work really closely with. Her name's Chelsea Buffington, and she does a great job driving all over the state of Washington to help everybody with their green crab needs. And so the added capacity enables folks like Chelsea and potentially other DFW technicians to work throughout the state in places that are not necessarily well suited to volunteer monitoring. Some of them are, you know, these are muddy places. They can be inherently dangerous. And so it's great to have, you know, professionals with the right, the tough gear, the tough mudders out there. Look, doing the work in places where they might be good for green crab, but it's hard for people to get to.
To get to. Okay, so thinking now a bit about our sort of more direct area, and I was thinking about where are the possible areas of concern kind of around Port Townsend. I'm thinking, well, of course, there's Discovery Bay. Not much that comes to mind on that little stretch, essentially from Cape George over to Fort Worden. I can't think of any real mud flats in that point. But that once you round that corner, you get to places like Cow Point, where you've got little, small lagoon. So if you think about this part of, I guess it's the far eastern part of Clallam County and eastern Jefferson County, what are you thinking about and what are you doing in those areas that are really close to us?
Yeah, so we have, for the past several years, had early detection monitoring sites that will continue to be monitored.
So I know there's been one at Cow Point.
Cow Point, Discovery Bay. There's one in a restoration site there. There are two in Squim Bay, so that's East Clallam. And there is one at Indian Island County Park.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Okay.
And that's actually very close to the site at Scow Bay, where there was a green crab captured 2 years ago, the second one in the Port Townsend region.
Okay.
So those are the early detection monitoring sites. And in addition to those, the sort of habitats that are pretty good for green crab that aren't covered by those sites will also probably get some early detection monitoring by DFW as the resources are available to do that type of work.
Of those sites in the past, you picked up a green crab in Scow Bay. Were there any other green crab sightings along those areas?
No.
No.
Trapped extensively in Scow Bay, the Indian Island, both sides, Oak Bay, both sides of the Portage Bay Canal there, and some around Chimacum, and then more extensive trapping in Cala Point. Those are all areas that were hit in late 2018. And the only crabs that were turned up were the original one in Cala Point and then the one in Scow Bay. And of course, Scow Bay is currently undergoing restoration.
Right.
So that's a site we haven't been able to monitor this year because of the...
Because they're where they're changing the outflow or through flow, I guess.
And it will probably actually be less hospitable for green crabs.
Yeah, once you get more water moving through there. The sampling season starts when?
April 1st. We're getting all of our ducks in a row. This week I will be cutting 1,012 pounds of mackerel along with very adventurous volunteers. And friends.
That's the bait for the traps,
that's
right?
That's the bait for the entire program. And so there's a lot of lead up, including seven or so training workshops all across the Salish Sea for folks who want to join Crab Team or continue their work with Crab Team.
When I, in 2016, went out with the Cala Point Crab Team, it was a collection of folks from the Port Townsend area, backgrounds, everything from government agency scientists to literature in foreign languages to an attorney, just folks kind of, I guess, interested. Tell me about the kinds of people who are on these crab teams.
Yeah, I have met a wide range of people who are among our volunteer corps and learned a lot about people's amazing life experiences that have nothing to do with anything salty.
So what do you think it is that attracts people?
Yeah, I think it's maybe in some ways the same thing that attracts me to it, which is just curiosity about the place. A lot of folks, this is their backyard or a place they've been curious about for a long time, and they're stunned to find out what's actually in it. They think, oh, there's no crabs in there, and we bring up traps on the first day, and they're astounded at how many native crabs are in those traps. And that's, of course, what you love to see, is to have folks meet a place that they think they know well in a new, totally new way. So I think the curiosity is a big part. And of course, I think we have a compelling mission all of us together, which is that we have a unique opportunity to prevent an invasion that's unfolded several times in different parts of the world where folks haven't had the opportunity, the timing pegged the way we have. So in other places where these invasions have unfolded, what they've seen is potentially dramatic shifts to the ecology of the places green crabs become abundant. On the East Coast, green crabs are largely blamed for some losses to shellfish growers or shellfish harvesters in that part of the world, and damaging eelgrass beds. And they're becoming so abundant that folks on the East Coast are trying very hard to get people interested in actually eating green crabs.
Which, of course, they do in Europe.
Of course, they do in Europe. And there's a fishery in the native range. The abundances in the native range are not as problematic as they are on the East Coast.
The world they're invading, those checks and balances aren't there.
Exactly right. And that enables them to become so abundant that, you know, anything that's just really numerous in a system, it has to eat something, it has to live somewhere, and by virtue of just making a living, it can cause pretty dramatic shifts in ecosystems.
Yeah, I kind of don't really want to play out in my mind, you know, the awful things that could happen in the ecosystem we sort of know and love here. But I'm thinking certainly we have lots of shellfish aquaculture, lots of recreational fishing going on, and we have habitats that are rich and healthy and support a large variation of critters, from the inverts to the vertebrates and the birds. And yeah, I just kind of don't even want to think about large-scale disruption.
Yeah, we may, if green crab were to become abundant, I do think the Salish Sea would look quite different than it does now. And it is hard to anticipate the specific ways in which it would look different, because of course invasions are different.
You don't.
That's one of the things that's sort of the sad truth about invasions, is that they're interesting to study as a biologist because they show you the connections you didn't know were there, because they sort of, they ping, they pull the wire in the system and show you how things are connected by disturbing part of it.
So tell me a bit, what got you interested originally in green crabs?
I've been thinking about green crabs since I was an undergraduate in Maine, where green crabs have been on the East Coast for 200 years, but they were continuing to become more and more problematic. The last few decades, green crabs, we sort of found out, science found out, that there was a second introduction event from the native range that actually made green crabs worse in the New England and Canadian Maritimes than they would have otherwise been, because they brought new genetic material.
Right, that's what I was thinking. It sort of probably brought it sort of an injection of vitality.
Exactly. Particularly cold-tolerant genes. And so at the time, green crabs were still, they'd been there for 200 years, and, you know, people are thinking, well, my family's, you know, been here for generations. This crab has been a part of it for generations.
So what's the big deal?
And yet things were still changing. Mm-hmm. So that I feel like there's just so many compelling stories from a scientific point of view that this one crab can tell. That's a particularly interesting one that captured my attention. And then through the sort of various ways one works their way through careers and lives, ended up out here on the West Coast, and was, unfortunately, I was pleasantly surprised to find that my knowledge gained on the East Coast could maybe be used out here.
Yeah, it's a sort of an interesting serendipitous kind of situation. But, yeah, interesting and a little scary at the same time.
I will say
the
green crab got here before I did.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not my fault.
Okay. We'll absolve you of that. So, thinking again about the monitoring that has to happen. If someone's listening to our program here and is kind of intrigued, first of all, tell me, how can people learn about the invasive European green crab?
We have a ton of information on the Crab Team website that talks all about the history of the invasion, potential impacts, as well as we have been tracking very closely on our blog, sort of the blow-by-blow, since 2016, since the first crab was found in Westcott Bay, of where crabs have popped up, what their numbers are, and what we plan to do about them. Mm-hmm. Collaborative management effort. across the state. So that's the first place I always recommend folks go. There's lots of videos. There's a great story map on there that actually shows you how the invasion has spread in the Salish Sea over time.
Interesting. And if someone is thinking, gosh, I'm kind of intrigued by this, maybe I might be interested in being on the crab team, but I don't know. I don't know if I could do it or what's involved, or how does someone kind of evaluate whether being on the crab team would be a good fit for them?
Great question. We love to work with adventurous volunteers who are excited to get out into these muddy places. Of course, you know, the caveat of doing tide work is you go out at low tides, and that's the best time to go out because it reveals all sorts
of
stuff.
Regardless of what time the tide occurs,
And you go out regardless of what time the tide occurs.
Right.
The weather. So there's a bit of flexibility that is ideal if you would like to participate in crab team. To work around tides, to work around the schedule of each site's individual team. And basically an interest in learning more about these places. There's lots of different things one can do on a crab team site crew. One can count crabs, but we have volunteers who do not like to handle crabs, and that's fine. That's why we have teams. And so those folks are excellent and provide their excellent handwriting on the data sheets, which makes things back at headquarters a dream for those of us looking at data sheets.
So just helping to keep the records.
Oh my gosh. Because as we tell our volunteers, the data sheets making it back to the office is really what makes your efforts worthwhile.
Yeah.
And it's not just paperwork.
It's making that information link.
So those are the types of considerations that go into being a volunteer, and the groups work on at one assigned site from April through September, one trap set per month, which means two consecutive days, day one trap setting, day two trap retrieval, and it's roughly, it seems to take folks about 2 hours on site, 2 days in a row per month. So it's, depending on your flexibility, it can be a great opportunity to spend a few hours, hopefully, in the sun. But
and
at least
it's sort of April through
September.
And if someone wants to pursue that interest, how do they do it?
Go ahead and visit our site, which is wsg.washington.edu.
Do you want to say that again?
wsg.washington.edu/crabteam. And check out some information on what it's like to be a volunteer. I also recommend checking out some of the photos of our volunteers at work. You can get an idea of what the work looks like. We recommend that if folks want to join Crab Team, that they start sort of thinking about it and planning in advance as much as possible.
And is there a schedule of your various trainings on your website?
Absolutely. Yeah. On the website, on the right-hand sidebar, we have an events calendar that lists all of our trainings that are around the Salish Sea.
Okay, that would be good to know. Any sort of closing thoughts you want to leave people with?
I think this is a really fun project for a lot of reasons. It's an unfortunate thing that green crabs are invading, and nobody's happy about it. But I think several of the collaborative projects that have come together as a result of Crab Team really demonstrate the power of people to work together and get behind the conservation of the Salish Sea. People from all over the place, tribes and agencies and everyday beach growers and shellfish growers, all in the same room together with a common goal. And I think that's a really powerful model for a lot of protection of the Salish Sea.
Well, thank you, Emily. I hope you have a learning summer, but very few green crabs.
That's always my hope.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Emily.
Now, an even more recent update. The leadership of Washington Sea Grant, in collaboration with the UW College of the Environment, is following all advice and directives set forth for the health and safety of the University of Washington around the COVID-19 outbreak. All crab team activities outside the home for both staff and participants have been temporarily suspended. Crab team members are working with each other via Zoom to learn more from the scientific literature and other researchers to collaborate on fitting together the puzzle pieces of the expected invasion and to maintain communications with volunteers and the public via newsletters and social media. Unfortunately, this new reality of a world with spreaded COVID-19 has come at a particular point in the efforts to manage the invasive green crabs statewide. With the new detections last fall and the increasing concern from the Outer Coast, the perception of risk of a damaging invasion has been substantially increased. Several populations are poised to grow without intervention, and now would have been a critical time for trapping and removal. And interestingly, quoting the Washington Sea Grant Crab Team website, it is not lost on many invasion biologists or crab team volunteers that some of the patterns and processes used to describe the spread of the virus are similar to the way we talk about invasive species. The value of finding cases while they are still extremely rare and controlling them before the impacts are observed on a larger detail. That is, by the way, the essence of early detection, rapid response, which are the cornerstones of invasion management. Well, you may have guessed, or perhaps not, that mystery sound was the sound of crabs walking through the water and clicking their claws in communication with one another. So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you've enjoyed our program, and we hope you're all safe, healthy, well, and taking care of yourself and loved ones. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays, with repeats here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM, on Thursdays at 5:05 p.m., and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening. And our ending music comes direct from Sesame Street. In 2016, Pharrell Williams' performance of Bee is for book.
Listen.
You can go anywhere without leaving your chair by reading a book. By reading a book. You can be anything, a pirate, a king. Just grab a book. Just grab a book. Pull a sword from a stone. Wind up on the throne. Have tea with the hatter. If it's mad, it don't matter, cause it's inside a book. Yeah, bees for book. Come along with me. Bees for book. Grab a book and you'll see. Bees for book. Come along with me. Bees for book. The letter B.
Wow, book do that. Me mind blown.
That's right, Cookie. You just have to use your imagination.
Fly to the stars.
Ooh.
I have a picnic on Mars. How?
Maybe never.
Oh, reading the book. Hang out with Miss Muffet
and ask her, what is a tuffet?
Yeah. Reading the book. Me got it.
Yeah, reading the book. Poke around in the gloom.
Yeah.
Of a dusty old tomb. Get chummy with your mommy without leaving your room. Cause it's inside a book. Yeah, be a book.
Read along with me.
The letter B.
Grab a book and see.
Oh,
read along with me, the letter B!